You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, here today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org. You may pass homeless people on the street each day, but few of us have any idea what life on the streets is like. Cadillac Man has been living on the streets of New York since 1994, and now he's written a book drawn from the diaries he's kept over the last 15 years. Or is that 16 years? 15 years. We'll get to that. Land of the Lost Souls, My Life on the Streets, is published by Bloomsbury. And joining me now are Cadillac Man and Will Blythe, a former editor at Esquire who found Cadillac Man and first published his writing in the magazine. I'm pleased to welcome both of them to the show today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Now, before we get started, can you tell us where the name Cadillac Man came from?
Oh, gosh. So many people ask me that. When you push your wagon out in the streets, you're a target, meaning by other motorists. Mm-hmm. So when a certain period of time, I was hit by several Cadillacs. So therefore, that's how I got my name.
Over the span of what period of
time? About 6 weeks.
How many? Come on. You said several, but I'm sure you remember how many Cadillacs.
Six, right?
Six, yes.
Cadillacs in 6 weeks.
That's
See,
correct.
I think getting hit by one Cadillac is an accident, but six is,
but six?
Is legendary.
I don't know. I guess Cadillacs like me.
I suppose.
You know.
Now, before we get into your deep into your story, which your book is so it's so captivating. It's really a good read. But Will, I got to ask you, how did you find him? How did you discover that he had been keeping journals? And what was it about him that led you to put them in Esquire?
Well, let's see. I was coming back from a family vacation, actually, mm-hmm. down south where I'm from. And it was in August, one of those sort of horrible New York August. And I remember I took a shortcut through the alley, and Cadillac was living at that time under the viaduct. And as I rounded
Which
the corner, this is in Queens, in Astoria.
Astoria, Queens, mm-hmm. yes.
And as I was rounding the corner.
Were you in a Cadillac?
And I wasn't in a Cadillac.
Okay.
I was actually on foot, yeah. Okay. I wasn't going to hit him.
Okay.
But as I rounded the corner, Cadillac said to me, and we really didn't know each other from Adam, he said, welcome back. You've been away 2 weeks. And,
That's right.
I thought, wow, this cold, heartless city is a little less so. And we started to talk and struck up a friendship. And I noticed one day that he was writing in an old-fashioned spiral notebook. And I said, what are you writing there? And he said he was basically doing his life story, or his story is he was writing about his time as a homeless man. Mm-hmm. And later I found out that he was doing that because he feared that he was going to die on the street, and he wanted to leave a record for his three daughters, mm-hmm. that he hoped those notebooks would be discovered before they shipped your body out to the land of lost souls, right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we got to know each other, and one day I said, well, if you ever want anybody to read them, you know, I'd be happy to take a look. And I say probably about 6 months after I first saw the notebooks,
yes.
you handed mm-hmm. me one, and I took it home. And my deal with myself was I'm only going to read as far as it seems to be halfway decent,
mm-hmm.
because I used to be an editor at Esquire, and I must have had probably, you know, I had so many manuscripts dumped on me over the years, but I started reading it, and it was the story of it was a story about the time he fell in love with a runaway Penny, who, up to his current love, Carol, was I think the great love of his life.
Yeah,
and sure I thought is. This thing is just amazing. It got better and better and better, and he has an incredible memory. There was dialogue, and I thought, wow, there are actually some literary possibilities with this. Mm-hmm. And so I sent it to former colleagues of mine at Esquire.
Mm-hmm. So Cadillac Man, your story starts, or your story being homeless starts, after you were living with your wife and daughter, and you worked for Pepsi. You worked at the Pepsi distribution warehouse
right.
in Queens.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go from that to living on the street?
I just had a whole bunch of bad luck. Like, I lost my job with Pepsi in 1990, and I was laid off. And fortunately, I was able to obtain another job working at a meat market up until 93. Now, the meat market had closed, So once it closed, I started looking for other jobs, and I just couldn't find any. And it got to the point where I was getting extremely depressed, you know, like everything wasn't going my way. And I was taking trips away from the house, you know, just out of the blue, I would just get up and leave the house in my depression. Plus, I was drinking a little also. And then finally, my wife, she just got fed up, and she says, you know, I want you to leave. You know, I can't deal with your comings and goings.
And where did you go?
As soon as she kicked me out, I went into Midtown Manhattan. See, originally I was living in Rutherford, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So I just took the bus into New York, and being that I was born and raised in the area, I said, well, what better place for me to stop?
Right, and you were born and raised in Hell's Kitchen.
That is correct.
Where in Hell's Kitchen? My last apartment was there.
Really? Oh, okay. It was on 45th Street between 9th and 10th Avenue. In fact, my brother is still living there.
Uh-huh. I was 43rd between 10th and 11th. Oh, so almost neighbors.
Right by Manhattan Plaza there.
Right, exactly. I used to swim there. Anyway, this is your story,
no,
not
that's
mine.
All right.
So you take the bus, you go into Midtown Manhattan, and do you go into the shelters?
No shelters. No, absolutely not. In fact, the shelters didn't occur to me. Again, I was still deeply depressed, and I just started walking. And I figured, well, let me just walk to the east side. And then I stopped. It was on 50th Street and Park Avenue. And that's it. I was just too tired to go anywhere else.
And so you just plopped right there?
Plopped right there. In fact,
50th Street and Park Avenue.
Yeah, right across.
I can see it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Waldorf Astoria.
Right across the street from it. That's where I parked myself. I saw a store that was vacant, and it had sort of like an alcove. And I says, yeah, I could stretch out over here. And I did.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, in today for Leonard Lopate, speaking with Cadillac Man and his co-author, Will Blythe. Cadillac Man is the author of Land of the Lost Souls, My Life on the Streets, published by Bloomsbury. So one thing I noticed, that, you know, in the book, you talk about, you know, the EMS and folks in coffee shops and police officers all saying to you, especially on cold nights, don't you want to go to a shelter? Don't you want to be inside? And you always said no. And this is something, you know, spending 16 years here in New York as a journalist, I always knew that lots of homeless people don't want to be in the shelters, nowhere near them. What is it about the shelters that says to you, stay away?
Well, the main thing that really sticks out is the danger within. You know, the shelter gets all types of people within. And one thing that we were mostly worried about were the predators. In other words, there were times where we had, like, ex-convicts. You know, there were people that were wanted by the police, you know, like all types of people. You know, like some people with some serious mental problems.
Mm-hmm.
So you really don't want to be in an environment like that. You know, you want to be someplace where you can close your eyes and not worry about anything happening to you during the night. So
it was safer on the streets.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
safer.
How did you know? It's one thing to be on the streets. It's another thing to know where is actually safe, especially at night.
Well, by being out there, you really have to do your homework while you're out there. Mm-hmm. In other words, you have to look for a spot where you can't be seen. So therefore, like say, in an alcove before it was dark there, and the only way that you could see me is if you're like say 5 feet away,
right?
Or you could go behind a building, you could go into somebody's backyard, you could hide behind garbage cans. Mm-hmm. You know, there were so many places that you could hide. You know, like, I don't know how many times people walked past me and didn't even know I was there, and that was quite a relief.
There was a great technique he had also, which is in the book, which is he would sprinkle peanut shells, right, around the perimeter of where he was sleeping. So if he heard somebody come up, it practically sounded like Vietnam or something.
Oh, yeah. In fact, with the peanut shells, and there was also, like, gravel and broken glass, you know, like in the dead of night. it is so quiet, you could actually hear like a leaf dropping. So therefore, anyone stepping on one of those peanut shells, like Will just said, it really like amplifies. So,
right. We're going to keep on with Cadillac Man's story in a second. We have to take a break. We'll be back after this. I'm Jonathan Capehart here for Leonard Lopate, and we're speaking with Cadillac Man and Will Blythe. They are the authors of Cadillac Man's Life.
I'm actually not the author.
You're not.
I'm just a friend.
You're just a friend.
And did a lot of reading,
He's
the sole author.
Misinformation. So Cadillac Man's book called Land of the Lost Souls, My Life on the Streets. So you became homeless in 1994.
Yes.
Which coincides with the start of Giuliani's mayoralty. Mm-hmm. And he started the high-profile campaign to get the homeless off the street.
Oh, boy, yes.
So this might be an obvious question, but did that make things harder?
When he came out with that new law regarding that, if I remember correctly, once it hit 32 degrees, they were required to pick up all the homeless off the streets and throw them into the shelters. Now, let's face it, when you've been out there for a long time, you do know how to survive the weather. And when I was told, well, you're going to have to get off the streets, you know, they actually have an officer come over and do a psychological profile on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah, I don't like the way this guy looks. Let's throw him in the shelter. You know, whereas with me, when there was times I was confronted by this, and they heard me talk, they said, well, this guy sounds like he has half of a brain at least. And then they would say, go ahead, hide somewhere. Hide somewhere. But I don't think it's fair, you know, to anyone to tell me, you know, where to go. You know, they say, well, it's for your own good. You know, how could you say that? That is for my own good. I know what my own good, right? But some of them, no. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they would bring it to a shelter that was like overpacked for the night. And they said, well, Brooklyn is overpacked, so therefore we're going to have to shoot up to the Bronx and see if they have an opening there. You go up to the Bronx, Bronx is full. So I tell you what, you're on your own.
So they would just drop you off in the Bronx?
Yeah.
If they picked you up in Manhattan or...
Exactly, with no car fare to get back to your comfort zone and what have you. So,
you know, the one thing I found fascinating in the dialogue between you and just about anybody, police, EMS, as I've said before, the guy at the coffee shop who would give you coffee and food, and you were always polite. Everyone was sir or ma'am. And the thing that I found even more fascinating was that the cops were equally respectful. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that I expected. Is it something you expected?
For the most part, you know, again, the way that I presented myself went a long way. Fortunately, with some situations where I really got into conversations with some of the officers, you know, I told them, you know, like, there was a time I was with the police department, and they're looking at me like, really? And then they would ask you the obvious questions that only a police officer would know.
Like?
Like, say, for example, they would ask you a certain, like, 10 codes. You know, like I would say, well, 10-1 is a report to your command. 10-30 is like a robbery in progress. You know, things of that nature. Well, where was your command? Well, my command was at Midtown North and, you know, the various chains of command and, well, where's the academy? And I would say it's 235 East 20th Street. And then I said, well, this guy really knows.
And so you wrote that even after 2 weeks, you considered yourself street. You said, even after 2 weeks, I considered myself street. I liked the lifestyle. What was it that you liked about it?
Oh, gosh, the freedom. The freedom where I could basically come and go wherever I want to, and I don't have to be accountable to anyone. You know, if I feel like being in Manhattan today, okay. And then tomorrow, I might be in Brooklyn or not Staten Island, but...
I noticed you only went to four out of the five boroughs. Why not Staten Island?
Well, my gosh, you got to take a ferry to get there. And not only that, too, the one time I thought about going there, you know, I hopped on the ferry and I took a little snooze, and next thing you know, I got one of these maritime sailors or whatever they have on there. Hey, you got to get off here, you know. Mm-hmm. So I said, nah. And I said, not only that, too, you can't even can. Mm-hmm. In Staten Island, so.
But you say that there's incredible freedom, but, you know, just reading the book though, it sounds like you're free, but there's hardship here. I mean, you just mentioned canning,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is, I guess, the primary way you made money.
Oh, yes.
You didn't panhandle.
No,
you tried not to.
Yeah, I just couldn't. Go up to a person and say, you know, pardon me, sir, could you spare a quarter and stuff? You know, that's one thing I was proud of all the years I was out there. I never asked for a dime. Although, don't get me wrong, you know, if people came over and offered me a dollar or two, and if I needed it, I would take it. If I didn't need it, I'm saying, no thanks. So I was making a fairly decent wage by canning. You know, if most people knew how much you could make, you know, maybe perhaps that they would do it on the side to... add another income to their household.
You want to let us in on the secret? How much are we talking here?
Well, when I first started out, I was making like maybe $5-$10 a day.
Mm-hmm.
But towards the end, I could make $50 to $100 a day minimum.
I mean, were there particular areas that you discovered, you know, this is where I go if I want a $50 day or a $100 day, or where no one else is going to pick up the cans that you would get?
Absolutely. In fact, we're all very territorial out there. You know, like, this is my working area. If I see you in my area, I'm going to chase you out unless you come over and ask permission. I mean, you would actually come over to me and say, hey, Cadillac, can I work your area? Now, there's nothing for nothing out there. You know, I'd say, okay, you could work my area for 4 smokes or a dollar or two. So not only that, too, some areas were just so big that I just couldn't cover everything. So I said, well, yeah, I'm going to do half this area, and I'll still have 50 to 100. So if he wants, okay, if he seems to be straight up and stuff, I'll let him. Others, forget about it.
So you're canning, you're free to go wherever, but you're also dealing with boredom.
Yes.
And you're dealing with loneliness, or at least you were. How did you deal with that during those hard times? Because now that you've got Carol, I don't think you're either lonely or bored.
No, that's for sure. She makes me very, very happy. I'm blessed. I'm truly, truly blessed to have such a wonderful woman in my life. You know, I just can't stop talking about it. She's done so much for me. She really turned my life around, and Will too. You know, I love him like a brother.
But before you found either of them, how did you deal with the boredom and the loneliness?
For the most part, with the boredom, the one thing that came into play was my writing. That did take up a lot of my time. And then the other thing, too, when you're walking around, you're not really that bored, because let's face it, there are so many sights that you could see within the five boroughs. You know, you could stop by, like, say, the Brooklyn Museum, and you say, hey, you know, I can go in there a while and scope it out. You know, of course, there's some areas where nothing's really happening, you know, like maybe on Park Avenue, there really isn't that much to see and stuff. But that's how I beat boredom, where, yeah, just walking around. And not only that, too, you're walking so much that you really don't have a time to be bored. It's only when you actually stop.
And he really wrote a lot. I mean, you'd come by and there'd be snowing, it'd be a blizzard, and he would be hunched under the viaduct with his hands freezing. And he would be scrawling away in that notebook. I mean, it was something that you'd see basically all day and all night. So, I mean, that was writing that book was a huge thing, I think, don't you?
Yeah, I had to put it down on paper, you know, because when you're homeless, it's basically you live day to day. You know, like the minute you open up your eyes in the morning, you see, wow, I made it another day, you know, and quite frankly, you know, I never expected, you know, to live this long.
Yeah, the book opens with you praying for the boss mm-hmm. to take you.
Yes.
And seemed disappointed that the boss didn't take you.
I was very upset about that. I was very, very upset. Again, you know, depression set in, and sometimes your mind is your worst enemy. And I started reminiscing about, you know, the life I once had. And mm-hmm. I started thinking about my children. And mm-hmm. that's what really made it especially hard, was thinking about my children. You know, the other part of my life, but mainly my children.
We have just about a minute left, and I can't let you go without talking about how this book and the articles in Esquire have changed your life. Are you still homeless? Are you still on the street?
I'm sort of like
part-time,
like semi-retired from the streets. In other words, I still go back to the streets. You know, back to Astoria, Queens. I love you, Astoria, and I go at least 3 times a week, like I said, you know, to meet up with the other street people that are still there, mm-hmm. you know, to catch up on the latest gossip.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'll come over to me and say, well, Cadillac, I got a problem with this person, or I got a problem with the police, or Cadillac, could I borrow a dollar? Or, you know, they're still my people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, I love them dearly, so... I could never leave the streets, even though I'm inside with the woman that I love, right? Part of my heart is still street. It always will be.
It's a great way to end. I'm John Capehart in for Leonard Lopate. I've been speaking with Cadillac Man, who is the author of Land of the Lost Souls, My Life on the Streets by Bloomsbury. It is a great read, a lot of fun to read because it's so real. And Will Blythe, who's the one who put Cadillac Man's diaries in Esquire. Thanks so much for being here.
No, thank you. I just still can't believe that it's happening. You know, I had several people that called me up and told me, Cadillac, you know, you're in Barnes & Noble's in the front window. And I'm saying, what? You know, and I went down there, and then sure enough, I actually saw my book there, and I'm saying, wow. And I'm so grateful for the people that are buying this book, because that means that they do have an interest in homelessness, and perhaps they'll change their views. You know, like, we're people too. All right, we look different from you, but still, we're living, breathing people with heart and soul. I just want people to remember that. You know, some of those people out there are your father, your brother, your sister, your aunt, or whatever. Please help them.
Thanks so much.